Shalom and welcome to Nourish Your Biblical Roots, Conversations with Yael. I'm your host, Yael Eckstein, President and CEO of the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. When my father, Rabbi Yechiel Eckstein of blessed memory, founded the fellowship, it was his goal to build bridges of faith between Christians and Jews. And it's my privilege to continue that work, which allows me the opportunity to meet so many like-minded people of faith, Christians and Jews alike, who stand with Israel unapologetically. And today's guest, also a bridge builder and a true friend of Israel, is here to talk not only about his own personal relationship with the Holy Land, but his church's historical friendship with the Jewish people. Mark Forrester is the Director of Communications and Public Relations for Assemblies of God. Many of you know all about them, but they were founded in 1914. The Assemblies of God is one of the largest Christian denominations, with 86.1 million members around the world in more than 450,000 churches. Working for the Assemblies of God's national office in Springfield, Missouri, Mark directs the church's production and media teams and has served the denomination for 16 years. Mark is also a published author. I'll link to his book, Trending Up: Social Media Strategies for Today's Church, in the show notes. So I'd like to welcome both a voice for a church that is a longtime ally of Israel and a Christian who is a lifelong friend of Israel. Mark Forrester from the Assemblies of God, welcome to my podcast.
Thank you so much. What an honor to speak with you today.
Well, you know, I didn't say this in the opening, but you're also just the most incredible, humble, smart, passionate, thoughtful person I have ever met. That we've been working together for over a year already. We were planning trips to Israel that didn't exactly happen because of October 7th. But you are always so humble, so thoughtful, you are a man of faith that gives a man of faith a good name.
Thank you so much.
So I want to hear all about you, both about you personally and also your work with the Assemblies of God. So let's start with that. You want to tell me a little bit about your own work with the Assemblies of God, and then we'll discuss the church's history and your life. But I want to know, what led you to work for the Assemblies of God? What roles have you served in? And what is some of the meaningful work that you have done while you've been in this position?
Sure, absolutely. So I've served here at the National Office for the Assemblies of God for 16 years now. And I moved here to Springfield, Missouri for seminary. And once I graduated, I was on staff at a church and thought that, you know, the assignment here at the National Office would maybe be about 6 months long. And, you know, 16 years later, here we are. Social media was brand new at the time, and everyone was trying to figure it out. And that's kind of the first role that I developed. And I started a network of friends and colleagues across denominational lines to be able to help strengthen each other and kind of build new pathways as new media was being developed. And that led me to my current role, which is public relations and communications. We basically do anything with words, if that makes it simple enough. We handle web, email communications, our news service, our studio and production team, media relations, all of that. So
that's incredible. And I think what stands out to me so much in that is how social media has such a bad name, because there's so much negativity on social media. There's so much information that tears people apart, that spreads hatred and lies, that creates silos. How are you using social media to do exactly the opposite, that specifically to spread truth, to spread love, to spread unity? How do you see social media as a tool to actually be aligned with your faith-based values and not against it?
Oh, exactly. I think there's tremendous opportunity, just as there's tremendous threat with social media communication. I mean, part of that is the coming together of voices. And when there are ill-aligned voices that come together, you know, it can be a force for evil, but it can also be a force for good. I mean, I think back at the story of Babel, and what sticks out to me in that passage is they said, we've come together, we want to make a name for ourselves. And I think there's that self-centeredness that can sometimes today come into social media, that we want to make a name for ourselves. We want to point to ourselves. And I think that's what we have to guard against in social media presence. We have to turn that from making a name for ourselves to aligning an outward focus. And that was the result of Babel. It was an outward focus that turned from there. So that's one thing that we try to do, is turn people from a self-centered approach to an other-centered approach in communication.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And it's so based in the values that you live, and that Assemblies of God lives and preaches as well. And like I said, Assemblies of God is over a century old and has more than 86 million members around the world, which is such a history. And the denomination has a history of supporting the Jewish people and the Zionist dream even before Israel's independence in 1948. I'd love to hear more about that. What can you teach us?
Sure, absolutely. There's a great history there. And communications has always been kind of a central hub in the Assemblies of God. So early on, we had a weekly publication that would go out called the Pentecostal Evangel. And it was kind of that unifying factor that was in publication for over 100 years. And so some of the quotes that I'm sharing are from that weekly. This one goes all the way back to August of 1915. It's one of the earliest reports that I can find in our publications that condemns anti-Semitism. And this is just barely a year into the Assemblies of God's existence. So it says, Jews in great numbers are wandering around, lost, shot at, accused of being spies, arrested, and liable to execution. Context here is World War I. And then they say, freely as the Jews have given of their wealth, and as they are heroic in battle, the Russian population cannot overcome old prejudices. And then they go on to express a hope that a pathway could be built for the return of the Jews to what they call their beloved land, Palestine, which we know that the context of that term has changed throughout the 20th century. But then in the aftermath of World War I, we see that same hope expressed in 1917, where our editors are bringing awareness to the persecution of the Jewish people in Poland,
Wow.
saying that millions are homeless and starving, non-combatants are being attacked. And so it's a rich history that goes back even that far to the earliest days of the movement.
It's I'm so I'm awestruck because everyone knows about the Corrie ten Boons and the Oscar Schindlers, and not many people know that Assemblies of God, even before World War II, and as Hitler began what we know as the Holocaust, that the Assemblies of God proudly stood for the Jewish people.
From the earliest days, just a deep love for the Jewish people that was expressed. I think of an article from 1929 that was in response to the British White Paper that was limiting immigration. The editor of our publication called it out as anti-Semitic, and he makes a point to say that as a point of solidarity, he attended a local synagogue here in Springfield, Missouri, just to build that bridge locally in response to what he saw on a global scale. As early as 1931, our editors were calling out Hitler and concerns that they had with his rise to power and the influence that he was garnering. And in 1932, not to bog us down with too much, but I find this so interesting. As anti-Semitism was kind of spilling across the Atlantic, the editors reminded readers of our Jewish roots, of the Christian faith. I'll read a quote here from that 1932 publication. It says, "The language Jesus spoke dripped with Jewish tradition and law. The little children he loved were Jewish children. He fed Jewish hunger. He poured out wine at a Jewish wedding, and he died quoting Hebrew from the Psalms," which I think is, such a powerful quote there to remind people of the roots of our faith. But then in 1933, there were several back-to-back articles that were in our publication encouraging friendship with Jewish people and opposing anti-Semitism. But such a powerful quote, they encouraged Christian believers, in their words, to be a Gentile Ruth to the Jewish Naomi. And they closed out that article saying, "Our attitude should be where you go, I'll go. Where you stay, I'll stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God."
I have the chills just hearing about this. I have the chills because this was going against the tide. This was during a time that so many Jews in America didn't stand up for the Jewish community in Europe, let alone the Christian community. And the fact that Assemblies of God recognized these biblical roots before it was mainstream like today, to recognize Jesus was Jewish, that Christians are grafted onto the rich olive tree of Israel, that they need just all these verses that it says in the Christian Bible that Christians should bless Israel and the Jewish people, tapping into that promise of Genesis 12:3, recognizing that biblical prophecy coming to fruition is part and contingent in many ways on this relationship, that it is so inspiring to see and to learn more and to dig deeper into how outward and unapologetic, it's just the word that keeps on coming to my mind, because today even people who are pro-Israel are a little bit apologetic about it, need to explain it, need to. This sounds like Assemblies of God was always very clear on which side they stood, and they were very clear on the moral right of the Jewish people to have a homeland, to return to their biblical homeland, which is simply incredible. And you've continued to this day, once again, with the rise of anti-Semitism before the October 7th attacks, after the October 7th attacks, to once again unapologetically stand with Israel. How have you have a lot of churches, you have a lot of members, and you have a lot of young people who are also exposed to the rise in anti-Semitism and demonizing Israel and the Jewish people. How have you seen the response, specifically from the younger generation of Assemblies of God, to outwardly, unapologetically standing with Israel in this post-October 7th world?
Sure. The Assemblies of God, I'm speaking about in the United States here with these stats, but we're very young and very diverse. 54% of the Assemblies of God in the US is under the age of 35, and 42% are ethnic minority, as opposed to 39% of the US population as a whole. So Pew has said it's one of the di most diverse faith groups in the US. But we see in the Assemblies of God, this isn't a demographic issue. It's not an age issue. But, it kind of goes back to a biblical issue. And so it's not, factions of support or factions of, love for the Jewish people. It is, spread across demographics, both across ethnic and age lines.
Amazing. And have you seen any pushback from this younger generation now with everything happening on college campuses and social media? Have you seen any young people asking you to reevaluate your stance? I know, for example, you came out with an official stance against anti-Semitism. How was that received?
Sure, yes. And this was in response to people in the Jewish community who had reached out to us as they saw the rise of anti-Semitism in the US in recent years. And he said, "We know you have a track record of opposing anti-Semitism. Would you be willing to come forward with a statement in that? And if you don't mind, I'd like to read a section
Please,
from that
thank you.
statement." It says, "As in
Yes.
times past, the General Council of the Assemblies of God senses an urgency to show unequivocal support of the Jewish people by repudiating every source, vehicle, or channel of anti-Semitism and making it clear to all people our stand against anti-Semitism and all forms of racism against any ethnic group. The Assemblies of God purposes to confront hatred, verbal abuse, negative stereotypes, conspiracy theories, propaganda, and attacks on the lives of Jewish people. Additionally, the Assemblies of God purposes to address anti-Semitic theology paradigms and reject any fabrication that the New Testament is anti-Jewish."
Incredible. This will go down in history forever, just like in the 19 early 1900s that has gone down in history, that over 100 years later we're still quoting it and remembering how bold and brave and standing on the right side of history your church was. We'll be talking about this for 100 years from now as well, that's for sure. And for you, Mark, it's personal. You first visited Israel as a young man, as a graduation gift, I believe. I'd love to hear about your experience walking this holy land, this holy soil for the first time.
Sure, absolutely. My grandmother always had a great love for Israel, which she said was passed along to her from her mother. And it was very important to her and to my parents as well that I see Israel at the beginning of my seminary education and Bible college experience. And so it was a graduation gift, like you said, that I went and you know, it was a great experience, just to challenge perceptions. I think, you know, growing up in America, we have our own perceptions of space, especially in such a wide spread out space. And, you know, some of the biblical narrative really changes perspective when you're able to experience the land. Our former general superintendent, Georgia Wood, led thousands and thousands of people on trips to Israel. But he always used to say the Bible doesn't begin with once upon a time in a land far, far away. You know, this is a place that we can access within hours on a flight and experience and see exactly where it happened. And I tell you, for that trip, one of the most memorable moments was we had 8 inches of snow in Jerusalem,
Oh, that doesn't
which
happen very
right,
often.
everything
Everything
shut
closed
down,
down,
right,
including every highway in and out, every grocery store.
right, which really gave us time to just you know, usually on a tour you're so busy you're going from one place to the next, but we got a
Right.
time to just soak it in and enjoy you know, local culture and really have kind of a slowdown moment in the trip. But it was such a fun experience for that.
That's amazing. That's so funny. It doesn't snow very often in Israel, and 8 inches is a lot. I always joke. I come from Chicago, where I was born and raised. And the first time there was snow in Jerusalem, but it was just a few flurries. It didn't even stick. Everything closed down. I was like, what's happening here?
Right.
It's not even sticking. But the roads aren't
Yeah.
made for it. The people aren't used to it. Yeah, it's definitely a big event when that happens. But what you say about space is really interesting, because so many people think that Israel is this huge country and, has all this land. We're the size of New Jersey. And just a few weeks ago, I stood in Kiryat Shmona, which is on the northern border of Israel. And I was less than a kilometer from Hezbollah terrorists in Lebanon. And I've stood in cities, Israeli cities, with the thousands of civilians that are on the border with Syria. And we saw on October 7th what happened. How there are thousands of civilians that live within a mile from the Gaza Strip, that in this tiny country the size of New Jersey, with enemies on every single side, you start to realize when you walk the land just what a complicated situation it is. But as you walk the land, you also realize that God is here. When you go to Hebron, to the tomb of the patriarchs, and you go and visit all these holy sites, and you go to Nazareth and to Tiberias and to Jerusalem, it's something that the Bible comes alive, and you realize, despite the complexity, there is a plan here, and ultimately, our prayers for peace, I believe, have a huge impact. I'm wondering, Mark, have you been back to Israel since October 7th?
So you on a recent trip, of course, this is prior to October 7th, with the press office for Israel. We went to the Kibbutz Nirim, and we had time to spend with Adele Raymer there and take us on a tour of what is it? She says 99% heaven.
Right.
And such a beautiful community there. And I'm not just saying visually, but just the sense of community that's there. And the efforts they have to build bridges, and then to see that same community just completely devastated on October 7th. It was so heartbreaking to hear the stories, the firsthand accounts, to read through text messages. It was so devastating being able to see that. I'm glad I was able to see it before this, but it's so heartbreaking knowing the pain that these communities have felt.
Yeah, I've been visiting those southern border communities for 20 years as the fellowship equips them with all different type of security vehicles and bomb shelters and all different security needs that they have. So I'm there constantly. I was there just a few days before October 7th. And to see the people who are so focused on peace and brotherhood and believing that it's possible and doing everything, when the people in Gaza would send over kites with bombs connected to them, they would send back letters praying for peace into Gaza on the kites. And to see how
Wow.
that dream has been shattered is something that is one of the most heartbreaking parts of it all, how lives have been ended, lives have been shattered. And the quest for peace has to start from scratch, because what we had before October 7th is no longer possible. We have to build new possibilities for peace. And none of us know what that looked like, but it's something we hope for. I was saying to my daughter who's going into the army, I said to her, "Do you believe peace is possible?" And she said, "I hope so, mommy. I hope so." And I think that's where we're all at. It's so hard to see if peace is really possible. It's so hard to believe it, but we will never stop hoping. We'll never stop trying. Thank you so much, Mark. I want to move on to the last question that I have for you. You are an expert and brilliant in the whole area of marketing, communication, social media. You authored a book, Trending Up: Social Media Strategies for Today's Church. Once again, I'll put a link in our notes. And I know, as people of faith and as parents, one of our most important missions is teaching the next generation. And social media is certainly an ever-present part of our young people's lives today. So I'm wondering if you can share with us some strategies that you found to be helpful, in reaching and teaching young people via modern technology. What are some ways that young people who are receiving anti-Israel messaging from all sides these days can be better equipped with the truth about Israel and the dangers of anti-Semitism?
Sure. And the book you're talking about, it was written in collaboration with, a lot of my best friends. I was talking about, early in my days with social media, where I connected across denominational lines. Several of us met at a summit and kind of polled each other, what are the top questions you get in social media? And so we boiled those down to 15 topics and responded on that. And I think, we've talked about misinformation in social media that's there. And I think in any form of media, you're going to have similar struggles. Before social media, there were chain emails. Before that, there were chain letters. There are always pieces of propaganda, anything like that. So communication itself doesn't change, but the nature of social media of bringing people together kind of reinforce propaganda does change the aspect. I think AI plays into all of this discussion on misinformation. Back in the 2016 election, following that, there was congressional hearings into misinformation on social media. And one of the most troubling parts of that congressional hearing is when they pulled up this chart of the troll factories and fake pages, and specifically how they were exploiting religion and Christian pages. And of the top 20 Christian groups, only one of them was a legitimate group that wasn't started from one of the troll factories with foreign interference. And so I think, especially in communities of faith, we have to realize we're a target of misinformation. We have to have a healthy dose of skepticism for what we see, especially when it trips over into news and news of a geopolitical nature, news regarding Israel. There has to be a healthy dose of skepticism. And I think building bridges with people on the ground is always a way to combat misinformation. I talked about visiting Nirim and meeting Adele, and then I joined her group, Life on the Border, I believe it's called. And groups like that, where you can hear from Israelis on here's what's actually going on, here's our perspective. Of course, IFCJ exists for this purpose on building bridges and bringing truth. I think, though, in general, it's those relationships that are the most powerful in combating misinformation. And it's not a secret, the way Facebook expressed in those congressional hearings that they were going to combat misinformation, so they were going to deprioritize anything but a one-to-one connection. As they said, a one-to-one connection is the most authentic. You know what? Faith groups are really good at those one-to-one connections. It's kind of what we're built around. And so I think it's a good lesson for communities of faith to go back to the basics, have a healthy dose of skepticism, and reinforce those one-to-one connections and build bridges.
Incredible. Mark Forrester, Director of Communications and Public Relations for the Assemblies of God. Thank you, thank you, thank you for joining me today and sharing some of your wisdom and inspiration with me and all of our listeners on the podcast. In the show notes, I'll link to the Assemblies of God as well as to your book on using social media for ministry work. Thank you again, and I hope that we'll be able to meet for coffee in Jerusalem very soon.
Yes. Thank you so much. What an honor.